This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Tuesday the 13th of May. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. I caught up with Magda Vizishka, CEO of Signia, to get her thoughts on US President Trump.
He starts high. You know, he doesn't start his negotiating position from the bottom. He just goes to the extreme high and then is very quickly, willing to start negotiating and negotiate significantly lower. But of course, his tariffs were insane. But, you know, if you look at it just purely from a negotiation perspective, it was brilliant. You know, he stays in many cases with a minimum of 10% tariff, while other countries feel that, that they actually have won in this negotiation by virtue of getting themselves down to, 20% tariff. I mean, if you look at China today, he's cut these duties to 30%, but it basically means that since he's been in power, president going back to his, last presidency, he's got import duties of 40% on China. And that's the negotiation.
We've heard repeatedly that he's transactional. And that's, I suppose, what you are reiterating now, is that he wants to make a deal and he starts it on his terms, effectively.
He starts it on his terms. And you need to, always appreciate that he's a businessman, whether good or bad is obviously up for debate, but he's a businessman first, politician second.
I also asked Magda whether we as South Africa were capitalizing on our presidency of the G20, in her opinion.
You know, if your largest trading partner, United States, doesn't pitch up, that tells you a lot about what you can achieve with, G20 presidency. So I don't think a lot is achievable unless you can bring US to the party. And of course, we are not doing that at all. So I think we're missing out on a huge opportunity to showcase South Africa on a global stage by virtue of the fact that, the optics at the moment are terrible.
Can we redeem ourselves? Is there any opportunity? As you said, the US president is now concerned with other issues. Do you think we can get a seat back at the table, or have we lost the opportunity?
Look, I think the opportunity was to stay in the shadows and not to poke our heads up. That was the opportunity, which unfortunately we have not that. We are right there as the one country in Africa that US is literally, taking pot shots at. So allowing us back to the table, I mean, are we important enough in Trump's life? I don't think so. I think it will be, extremely difficult for Mtsebisi, who I do know personally. He used to be a board director of Signia, and he is an an incredible diplomat. I think he will struggle to achieve very much. And again, the very fact that you've got this, 80 refugees pitching up at, the airport, and that kind of makes the news because it's sensationalist. I think it will be very, very, very difficult for us to, as you say, redeem ourselves.
Alex spoke to the man who narrowly lost out on becoming the US's ambassador to South Africa, Joel Pollack. Pollack provides a taste of the excitement he would have generated in this feisty interview with Alec, where he offers an alternative view to the SA government criticism of the first 49 Afrikaner refugees who arrived in Washington yesterday.
Why this particular group? Because Afrikaners, for various reasons, including history, have been targeted, and they are presented both within South Africa and to the rest of the world as a group uniquely undeserving of sympathy. And it's because of apartheid, and it's because of what was done in the name of the National Party and in the name of Afrikaner nationalism. And I think people had a certain tolerance for that for a while. But now it's more than a generation out, and the majority of South Africans were born in freedom. And yet you still have this kind of attitude that Afrikaners don't matter. It's the one group that really isn't allowed to express itself politically and that's under this constant cultural pressure from people who want to undo Afrikaans schools and change the curriculum at Afrikaans-speaking universities if those universities happen to excel and have good reputations. And, it's eventually reached the ears of some policymakers in Washington who said, enough is enough. I mean, I think South Africa's pushed it too far. I just think they've pushed it too far. And that's why we are where we are. I mean, it's not just the fact that there are influential voices and people who've been successful at presenting the case. There are millions of South Africans who feel voiceless. But, we cannot have half the population of South Africa move to the United States as refugees. There is this group that has been singled out, and not just for gender-based violence, but for all kinds of things. And they've gone unheeded. I'll also say this. You have some very effective lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and AfriForum and other groups have done a very good job at presenting the Afrikaner case. But you also have a very effective lobbyist in the person of one Julius Malema, who gets international attention when he holds rallies on Human Rights Day and says, shoot the farmer, kill the Boer, shoot to kill. And then your constitutional court refuses to take up the case. Now, we don't have hate speech laws in the United States. We have a much more libertarian approach to freedom of speech. And even under our laws, he would be arrested for incitement, because incitement is not protected by free speech anywhere in the world, including in the United States. To get up and tell a crowd of people to kill another crowd of people based on their race and their ethnicity. Now, he may not be in the government, but that's not a distinction that's easily made from abroad. And his party is in some governments in the United States, in South Africa. So people are attacking AfriForum and the Afrikaner leaders who've gone to the United States to make their case, maybe because it's easier than attacking Julius Malema. If you want my opinion, that man belongs in jail. He certainly should have been held liable for the hate speech that he's spewed over many years. And I don't think the day is far off where he is the target of sanctions and other penalties by the United States.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
BizNews' Chris Steyn spoke to Ian Cameron, who slams the acquittal of SAPS officers, saying he's shocked that video evidence was deemed inadmissible in a disciplinary process, despite court acceptance in May 2024. He stands by calling the VIP8 thugs, urging scrutiny of the flawed process while defending his support for ethical policing.
Nevertheless, they were acquitted by SAPS for the relevant internal charges. Now, what's very interesting about this, and I haven't seen the whole report yet, and although I condemn it being leaked, it's important that I do say that a part that I have heard, that I read through the media over the weekend, was that the disciplinary process or the chairperson found that the video footage was not admissible as evidence. Now, this is shocking. I mean, this was the root cause to the entire incident. And how could it be? And they claim that it's because they couldn't prove the authenticity. How is this possible if even a court in May of 2024 determined that the video footage is admissible as evidence? So obviously, I mean, and I'm not going to comment on judicial matters. I don't have the competency to, but what I can say, just from a legislative point of view and from an oversight or inquiry point of view, I find it strange that if this were to be true, that a disciplinary process sees itself as being a step above the judiciary, which is very worrying. So that's that part. So throughout this process, several times in Parliament, I called the VIP8 thugs. And that is exactly what they are. They are thugs. They behave themselves as such. They are an embarrassment to many good career police members. And there is no justification for what they did. Now, from both Pop Crew and unfortunately SAPU as well, they are very aggrieved now, because how dare I call them thugs? And Crew tried last week in a little bit of a cheap attempt at a police officer's funeral, which makes it even worse, to say that they called me the white boy, thinking that he's the chairperson of the police or something like that. And I take it from who it comes, so I don't have sleepless nights over those types of comments. But they then said that, how dare I call police thugs? Now, everyone knows, anyone that puts in a little bit of effort to do just a little bit of research knows how incredibly enthusiastic and passionate I am about good policing, and how many police officers I have fantastic relationships with. So I would never make a sweeping statement like that. But when it comes to rogue cops, I would. And I stand by that. And in a parliamentary context, as part of my constitutional duty to do oversight, I'm not going to allow any union to make me look or seem or feel like just being a rubber stamp that needs to simply approve anything they say or do. There's something very wrong with the process that was followed here, and it's critical for us to dissect it.
US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says the current tariff level on China is obviously a flaw, with a process in place to avoid further escalation.
This is a pause down to 10%. The April 2nd level for China is 34%. So we will be working to see where their final reciprocal number ends up. And the negotiations are a combination of tariffs, non-tariff trade barriers, currency manipulation, and subsidies of labor and capital.
Just to build on that, as I listen to you, do you consider the new levels as a ceiling or a floor?
Well, it's obviously a floor, that they are now with everyone else who did not retaliate. So the levels have come down to the pause level. And what I would say is 34, which is their assigned April 2nd level, would be a ceiling, which is what I went out and told people on April 2nd, which is why I was surprised market participants panicked, because we had capped the upside for every country. And if they didn't retaliate. So this unfortunate turn of events happened because of retaliation. But now we have a process in place to avoid escalation like that again.
Staying on the international front, just before Trump's Middle East visit, Hamas freed the last living American citizen held hostage in Gaza. Bloomberg's Dan Williams has the story.
Yes, I think it very much is connected. It was announced hastily just 2 days ago as the U.S. president was preparing to embark on this trip, a trip at which he's saying he will drum up major business for the United States. He may also make deals in terms of statecraft. And one of the most pressing crises in the Middle East has been this ongoing war in Gaza that he wants to end. One of the elements of that war has been the plight of remaining hostages held by Hamas. Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and he sees this release, something he brokered directly with Hamas, which is very unusual in terms of U.S. policy, given that Hamas is deemed a terrorist organization by the United States and many other countries. He sees this move as potentially dislodging that diplomatic logjam around mediated talks between Israel and Hamas for the recovery of all the hostages and the end of that war.
Right. And Dan, what's the quid pro quo for Hamas? And is there a downside here for Israel?
Well, that's an excellent question, because on the face of it, and certainly the Israelis have been a pain to say this, Hamas did not gain anything immediate in terms of a ceasefire from Israel. There was a very short, very local tactical ceasefire in order to enable Idan Alexander to be safely removed, returned from the Gaza Strip. But since his recovery, Israel has resumed and perhaps even redoubled its airstrikes against what it calls Hamas targets in Gaza. The quid pro quo most obviously for Hamas is that directing engagement with the United States, the prospect perhaps of Trump compelling the Israelis to enter a deal more favorable to Hamas. Israel, on the face of it, is saying it would be willing to enter new negotiations. However, it insists on its core demands that any end to the war mean an end to Hamas rule and an end to the Hamas arsenal. Now, one thing that's worth watching in terms of the pageantry of this Trump visit is whether, as has been reported in Israel, he actually brings Idan Alexander, maybe other ex-hostages with him to Qatar, which is one of the legs of this visit. Qatar is a country that's been mediating or trying to mediate between Israel and Hamas. It's had a troubled relationship. So that's worth watching.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context, both local and global. Thanks as always for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.